This is the Paula Gordon Show, Conversations with People at the Leading Edge. I'm looking at one of them. She is Alexandra Fuller. Bill Russell and I are delighted to be back with you, Alexandra. In a funny kind of, I have a friend who says, Paula, everything with you is political. Well, yes.
Waking up in the morning is political.
That's right.
The decision to breathe
yes,
is political.
And the, well, exactly.
Political is from the polis. Political is describes those people who live in a polis, people who live in a community. We live in a community. We are social animals.
Which brings me back exactly.
What this is all about.
Exactly. It seems as you are telling these stories that they are all political.
And I want to go back to something Bill said earlier, which was about the way that the people of Wyoming have been exploited. Mm. And I was trying to respond to that and got sidetracked by something completely different. But here you have a cowboy in a very Republican state who has not, the furthest Colton ever went from home was Arizona, maybe Nevada. I mean, he never came out east. His world was very confined by that wind and that wide open space, but confined, he barely made it through high school. He got an A in hunter safety, but in every other subject in school, he really struggled. His father might be one of the most guru-like, iconic men I've ever met, with a deep understanding of what it is to be self-contained and in charge of your own soul. But he's a cowboy. He left school at 14, because it was hard for his parents to keep paying for him because his father was a roughneck. He went and worked breaking colts till the ranch sold, and then he broke oil rigs for a living, and he's been on oil rigs for 30 years. These people, they wake up at 4 in the morning and they're on the rigs, hell or high water, for at least a 12-hour shift. There are regular
high water or blizzard.
High water, blizzard, or blistering sun. And they yet believe deeply when someone in shiny cowboy boots shows up and tells them, "You're doing this is your duty as an American, this is your patriotic duty to get these minerals out of the ground because we're at war. And if we don't get the minerals out of the ground, we're going to have to send more boys to Iraq." I mean, that is the explicit threat. I've heard that coming out of the mouths of these men who have the oil companies.
Well, and you add to that, Dick Cheney is
from
identifies
Wyoming.
Himself with Wyoming, and
right.
Talk about a chicken hawk.
Yeah. And so, now you say to someone as decent as Bill Bryant, or as big-hearted as Colton Bryant, if you don't drill here, some boy's going to have to go and get shot at in Iraq. He's going to get up an hour earlier and drill an hour later.
The species is not well adapted to dealing with lies. The evidence is.
Cowboys are least well adapted to dealing with lies.
And I think humans. I mean, we've had it happen in this country. It happened in Germany. It's happened throughout history, that people, the bad guys, will stand up and make the most outrageous claims, make them consistently, and they will exploit those people. Because if you don't tell lies, you don't expect anybody else to tell lies. And these mm-hmm. cowboys, you know, they're honest men. You know, the environment that is so much a part of them doesn't. You can't be dishonest with nature. Nature doesn't.
And you
care.
Can't be dishonest as a cowboy. It turns out, as long as you're the kind of cowboy who sticks around, because eventually, bad weather or a rank horse is going to show you for who you truly are, or a mountain will get a hold of you. Or you'll make some other mistake, and the truth of who you really are, just like soldiers, is going to, you know, I had written a previous book about being with a soldier, and the one thing that struck me about being with these soldiers, by then the war had been over 25 years when I was with these soldiers, but they didn't trust people who had not also been soldiers, because under fire, people's true colors come out. And so I think these cowboys are raised around other cowboys who don't bother lying, because if you're a cowboy, eventually the truth will out. Well, when someone swanks in with shiny cowboy boots, and he's got the language, and he's clearing his brush on his Texas ranch, and he's doing these other very calculated acts, you buy the lie. And you pay for it with your life. And I think...
And your children pay for it, and your community pays for it, and the land pays for it.
And I think one of the things, you know, I was concerned about being an outsider coming in and writing the story.
You talk funny. You don't sound like a white...
I talk funny, is right.
...person from Wyoming I've ever heard.
But I tell you what, the same lies I heard in White Rhodesia are being told in Wyoming. And it's the same young, good men that are being exploited by those lies, by those white lies.
What is the antidote?
And you don't mean white lie as in little bitty lies.
I mean white lie as in my case, it was a racial lie. Thank you for asking what the anecdote is. I think we need to get to that. For me, it was Colton H. Bryant.
The antidote, not anecdote.
Sorry.
The antidote is...
Colton H. Bryant.
Colton H. Bryant, he's also the anecdote. But the
This is the anecdote.
Yeah. As, you know, I came at this book, I came at the story, I came at the magazine piece I was doing with so much self-protective irony. I was so exhausted from this administration, so cynical, so helpless feeling. I thought, we're done. We're done. And I'm just going to... And it was, I was writing, I think, quite angry, quite sort of prejudiced stuff. I don't know if you got a chance to see the magazine article, but it is... there's very little warm about it. I may have been warm about the land and a couple of cowboys, but other than that, it's an angry, angry piece.
Yes, it was.
And correctly so.
But The Legend of Colton H. Bryant has no anger in it, except at the very end. It would have cost the oil company $2,000 to keep this boy alive, but I save my anger for a page and a half at the end. What I did instead was write with love, because that was overwhelmingly the miracle and the pilgrimage of doing the research for this book, was that as I started to listen, and boy, did I have to listen hard for Colton, through the men that knew and loved him, through the women that knew and loved him, through his children, through his horse, through the wind, through that blistering sun, through the weather, just through driving and visiting cemeteries, what I found happening was my cynicism wearing away, because Colton didn't have an ounce of it. And instead, I came away with the indisputable fact that Colton H. Bryant had a soul, and that soul was well and truly here. And my own soul started to emerge. And it was the most painful thing. The pain of giving birth to a soul in that raw Wyoming wind, it hurt. And I took sanctuary in small wooden churches. There's a little wooden chapel in Jackson. I would say, not a believer in God, but at that point I could not deny that Colton's soul was there, so I'm a believer certainly in a greater soul. And I took sanctuary in a little wooden church so that my soul had a place not to get battered about. There was a moment when I went up to... I'm sitting there thinking, you know, what am I doing here? It took me months. So my arms crossed. I'm quite kind of hostile to this whole idea of communion, the whole blood, flesh thing. I finally went up to take communion. I looked down, and we're all kneeling, and I looked down, about three people down from me is my arch enemy. He is pro-drilling, and he thinks grizzly bears and lions should just be shot, and that way he can hunt without being worried about someone eating him. And we get into such a... His son and my son both play hockey, and at hockey matches they have to separate us. I have my hands up for the bread, and I'm looking up at the wine, and I take the bread and I take the wine, and I look down and he's doing the same thing. And that was the miracle of Colton H. Bryant right there, was he brought me to my knees. He wore away my cynicism, and he made me realize in a way that nothing else could have, we're all drinking from the same cup. We're all eating from the same loaf. We all need to breathe the same air. We all need to share energy. Beautiful passage in The Old Way, Elizabeth Marshall Thomas's brilliant book, about women coming to a celebration, bringing their own energy, their own firewood, and at the end of the celebration, each of them picking up the sticks that belong to them. That ownership of energy, that understanding that it is finite and limited, and that we must each know where our energy comes from, where our wine and our loaf and our air comes from, and that it belongs to all of us. That was the miracle of Colton H. Bryant.
We will be back with not only the miracle, the author of the legend from which the miracle took life.
Emerged.
And we'll talk about that baby who also helped be part of the miracle. Many miracles to come with Alexandra Fuller here on The Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I and Alexandra invite you to be with us in a moment.